Sophie's Choice as a novel and now as a film has aroused the interest and acclaim of critics as well as audiences. As a novel, it will undoubtedly take its place among the great American classics. Author of Sophie's Choice, William Styron, is one of Virginia's own. Born and raised in Newport News, Virginia, Styron's work consistently reflects, through his characters, aspects of life in the Tidewater. In Sophie's Choice, Stingo, the story's narrator, tells his tale from Brooklyn, an aspiring young writer transplanted from the Old Dominion. It leaves one to wonder how much of Styron's characters are Styron himself. Welcome to Frankly Speaking. I'm Joan Ziemba at George Mason University, the State University in Northern Virginia. In studying Styron's characters, we have to take a good look at Styron himself. A recently produced TV documentary offers the opportunity to see Styron as an author in relation to his characters and as a person born and raised in Virginia. The program, broadcast through Virginia during December and January, will be aired in the metropolitan Northern Virginia area again on January 23rd on station WNVT. Producer of the documentary, Dr. Joel Foreman, an independent television producer and a professor at George Mason University, will give us a new look today at author William Styron. Joel, in your documentary, Styron discusses his relationship with his characters. How much does he admit to traits and experiences developing in his characters from his own personal life?
He admits that there's perhaps 0.1% of himself directly in the books. But I think a careful study of him will discover that there is much, much more than that. But the books are so enormous, all of them, and particularly Sophie's Choice, I think, which is the one where you do see him most clearly, representing the character Stingo first and foremost, but probably also in all the other characters to one degree or another. But he's a very strong presence.
In the case of Stingo, as you point out, there seems to be the greatest parallel. Is Stingo in reality Bill Styron?
Stingo is a perfected and version of Bill Styron as he used to be. Is Bill Styron reflecting upon himself at an earlier period of his life when, in fact, he did, as a young man, come to New York and spend a very difficult and long apprenticeship writing what became his first novel, a very, very highly acclaimed one, Lie Down in Darkness? That is him, yeah.
Well, in Sophie's Choice, Stingo mentions two other story ideas, one which he's working on, which appears to be Confessions of Nat Turner, and a situation which he experiences in New York in reading about a suicide in the newspaper, which then turns into Lie Down in Darkness.
Well, I remember talking to him about that episode, or at least the suicide. Mariah Hunt, I think, was the name of the heroine. And I don't actually remember whether that did happen or not. Apparently, Peyton Loftus, who is the central character in Lie Down in Darkness, and who does commit suicide, was modeled after a lot of different people. In fact, I recall spending some time at Duke University reading some of his letters. And in them, he mentions, after the publication of the book, coming back to Newport News and being at a country club party and meeting, and being very embarrassed to meet one of the young women who did later on become part of the model for Peyton Loftus. So, there was a woman back there somewhere who did commit suicide. There was a woman who was having a somewhat tragic relationship with a golf pro. There were lots of them, and I think that's in general the way he works. You know, he incorporates bits and pieces from everything he does and everything that he sees, and merges them together, and they become the characters, which are, yes, part of reality, and in fact, not at all.
Did Styron share with you where the idea began for Sophie's Choice for him?
Well, I remember that he was working on a book called The Way of the Warrior, which he hoped to be his next book, and a very serious theme, as are all of his books in this instance, war and the individual. And he had been working on that book for about 3 or 4 years, and suddenly dropped it, much to the dismay of Bob Loomis, who was his editor, and suddenly picked up upon Sophie's Choice and began writing that, and I believe wrote it relatively quickly for him, I think in about 4 years. The the seminal idea is Sophie, and he did meet a woman while he was in Brooklyn at the Pink Palace, while trying to write Lie Down in Darkness, by the name of Sophie, who was actually a survivor of a Polish concentration camp. To say he knew her would be a little bit exaggerated, because they more or less just passed. They may have talked occasionally. Did in fact see that she had a number imprinted on her wrist. She was having a relationship with an innocuous biologist, as he recalls, but somebody who apparently was very unlike Nathan. Although he interestingly enough told me that he received a letter from somebody who seemed to be quite authentic, who claims to have remembered this pair from that time. And there was something else also about a cat which had been strangled, presumably by this innocuous biologist, mm-hmm. and that all of that in retrospect seems to suggest to Bill that he did somehow understand what was really going on in that relationship. But again, what he finally came up with is probably more consistent with his own life in previous years than I think of that time.
What are some of Styron's major themes in his work, and does this reflect relationship with his own life throughout?
Well, certainly preoccupation with the ultimate death, the absurdity of existence. That's the thing that's something that I happen to be interested in general. So I always find that in his books, but he will openly admit a very, very powerful indebtedness to the existential tradition. And he very early became disaffected with organized religion and religion in general, moving to having a central belief in a world which is essentially chaos, mm-hmm. chaotic. And that seems to lie behind the totally irrational, unpredictable, unexpected events that take place in the books and the kinds of crazy things that happen. I mean, you can't think of any, I can't think of anything more absurd than a meeting and a love relationship developing out of a meeting between Sophie and Nathan, this, nut. Why they came together, why they stayed together, why they ultimately died. I don't think that there is any meaning to that. And that, of course, is its meaning. I mean, it's just inexplicable, I think, in terms other than just a very tragic view of what life is all about.
His books also seem to contain a very blatant emphasis on oppression, whether it's slavery or bigotry or concentration camps, and it could be societal or in a family sense. Is there any relationship in his background with that?
No, he has felt that. He admits freely to it. He experienced that to a certain degree in the Marine Corps, but I think the prototypical experience was with his stepmother. His mother died when he was 12 years old, and his father remarried not long thereafter, and he didn't get along well at all with his stepmother, who was a very prim, difficult, morally upright woman, and Bill was not any of those things. And he went off to private school, probably as a way to maintain his sanity, as perhaps as well as that of the family. And that seems to be the kind of fundamental experience, at least the only one that I can see, which ultimately led to a very basic rebelliousness, a very basic antipathy to authority and organized authority in general.
Producing a documentary on this man was no doubt an exciting and challenging project. How did the project develop, and what was his attitude when you approached him and said, "I want to do a documentary on Bill Styron"? How did he respond to that?
He was very open, right from the start. I mean, just sort of struck it off well immediately. It was not difficult to get in touch with him, and once I had explained what I wanted to do, I flew up to Martha's Vineyard, where he has his summer home. And we spent about half a day just talking, and I suppose that I was well prepared. I had read all his books. I had researched his life rather thoroughly, and I believe that he recognized that we simpatico on a very fundamental level. I mean, we're interested in many of the same things. We're both nostalgic about the past. We both have strong feeling for family and tradition. And obviously I'm interested in literature, but in perhaps a larger than an academic context. And I think all those things appeal to him. And consequently, it developed right from the very beginning, a strong commitment. And there were times when our relationship was tested a bit, but never seriously. It was most of the time. It was always intense. I mean, after all, one goes into a situation like that, trying to be as comfortable as possible, and yet, you know, trying to maintain somewhat of the objectivity of the anthropologist might have, mm-hmm. you know, trying to figure out what's going on here, and you know, how can this become part of a documentary, and what's the next best question to ask, and things of that kind.
Originally, you intended this to be a 30-minute documentary, and it's now a 60-minute documentary. I imagine that throughout the year, you accumulated a tremendous amount of tape and information.
Well, I spent, I suppose, about 8 months just doing research and visiting him a number of times, talking with him, just hanging around and following him through his daily paces, talking to people that he knew and with whom he associated. And as I mentioned, these letters of his that I read at Duke University became extremely important and helpful in terms of making the program into 60 minutes, because that particular, I put together what looked to be a very brief script, three short pages of excerpts from his letters, which I asked him to read, and he went on to comment about them. And it became a very important and apparently very entertaining and revealing part of the program. That in particular helped to make it into a 60-minute program. But all of the research, certainly. The actual taping of the program took place only in about 4.5-day period.
The documentary opens with Styron preparing a Virginia ham for a party. Although he's now living in Connecticut, how Virginian is Styron? And how is this repeatedly reflected in his work?
Well, he's very much a man who is deeply nostalgic, who is constantly in touch with his past. There's a phrase from Faulkner. I don't remember exactly what it is, but it has something to do with the interconnection, the constant interconnection between past and present. And that seems to me to be very much the kind of thing that is fundamental to Bill Styron as well. So that he's always processing what's going on in the present through that past, which is for him the formative past is that Virginia experience, and if Nat Turner, obviously the whole thing is based on his Virginia experience. Sophie's Choice, through the character of Stingo in particular, who's deeply and consistently and always Virginian, is has that Virginia experience there, and his constant coming back to Virginia to participate in, I mean, he was recently organized in Richmond, the Southern premiere of Sophie's Choice for the benefit of Christ Church, where he this Episcopalian private school, he went to high school. And that's, he's always coming back trying to maintain, continue his sense of his being a Virginian first and foremost.
And Bill Styron will be at George Mason University for a public viewing of the documentary on February 4. Again, the documentary will be aired this month on WNVT on January 23rd. I'd like to thank Dr. Joel Foreman for being with us today and giving us additional insights into the novelist William Styron. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University. For more information about this program or our guest, please call area code 703-323-2138. This is Joan Ziemba at George Mason University, the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.